The first item on the study session agenda is to hear a presentation discuss fiscal year 2009-10 budget update and financial forecast. Mr. Raines, Mr. Odom.
And Mayor, maybe before they begin, let me just make a few comments for the council as we begin to review and update the council on the city's forecast as we look forward. If you recall, more than a year ago, we were feeling the significant shifting sands of the economy underneath us, and we responded early on in our in that process to make some significant adjustments. A lot of sacrifices by city employees, changing services, eliminating services, consolidating departments, really looking at innovative and I think leading edge delivery of services, and all that was accomplished. We did that in a very, I think, expeditious manner. No doubt there were many of our employees that were affected, many that we unfortunately had to release from the city. What we're about today to do is as we continue to look at where we stand in the economy, we want to make sure that we're always in a position to look out far enough ahead that if we need to make adjustments as early on as possible, that we can. So today what you're going to be getting is not necessarily a bottom line, here's what the overall number is, but we're going to begin to identify what we see as the variables, the issues that we need to understand how it, that are going to affect the city's budget in the upcoming future, whether it's what we get from the state, urban revenue sharing, rising costs and pension and health benefits, and how those are all going to impact us as we move forward. What we'd like to do is begin laying the groundwork today, not necessarily seeking to, we're not coming up with any dramatic changes or proposals, but begin kind of laying the foundation. And then what we'd like to do is come back in February. At that point, we feel like we'll be in a position to give at least at that point, a forecasted number of any impacts that we're going to have to start adjusting for going forward. We feel confident that we're still in a position to continue through the remainder of this fiscal year, which we're almost midway through at this point, that we have, because of our developing, putting together significant reserves, and being able to realize additional savings from last year's reductions and adjustments and changes in services, that we look forward to being able to move forward this year. But we are all looking out into the future. So we're looking at what we're going to have to make adjustments in the next year and a half. But we're also looking at how do we solve for the next 3 to 5 years. The challenge we have, and you'll hear this from Chuck and Brian, is our economic metric models that we've relied upon in the past are learning to adjust themselves because the reliability certainly has been challenged. And we use standard ones that come from some of the, you know, long-standing, very professional forecasting models out there that we subscribe to. But I guess my caution is that while we'll show you the numbers today and what people are what is being projected by the leading economists for the state of Arizona, we do so with a great amount of caution and conservative concern that we're not sure anybody understands where this is all going or how fast things may recover. So that's it. A question was asked me the other day, I think it was by Councilman Richens, so what do you see different about where we stand today versus where we were maybe 13 or 14 months ago? 13, 14 months ago, when we were seeing huge decreases in our sales tax and other areas, significant 15-16% drop-offs each month, we also looked around us and saw that on the national scale and the global scale, if you would, a lot of other retractions in the economy, a lot of adjustments taking place. There was not much hope as far as improvement, and matter of fact, everybody was talking about the recession. Today, I would say we are still not sure that we have hit complete bottom, but the rate of decline has seemed to be mitigated. It does seem that there are other parts of the country that are starting to see, or certain parts of the sector of the economy that are starting to see some amount of recovery. There are those who are suggesting the recession is over for certain parts of the economy. So there seems to be some more optimism generally, yet we know in the state of Arizona and certainly in the Phoenix area, we've been designated as one of the hardest hit economies in the nation. And so we take that seriously as we consider what it's going to take for us to move forward. But there does seem to be some measured amount of optimism of recovery. I think the question is when and how fast. So we are going to move very cautiously as we look forward to the future in our forecast. So I just kind of want to lay the groundwork about where we stand today. So with that, Brian, or Chuck, or whoever it was, sorry.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Probably the perspective I'd like to put on this is we usually do a mid-range and long-range forecast during this time of year. As we'll get into some of the revenue areas, and I think you've probably reviewed your packets, you see some growth curves out there. I would call how I view them are pessimistically cautious. I would not put a great deal of reliance.
As opposed to cautiously pessimistic?
Yes. Okay. Or even optimistic at this point.
Optimistically pessimistic?
Yes. Okay. So usually I'm optimistically cautious. This time I'm pessimistically cautious. I think the growth curves could be a little too great as what they're predicting out there. They're much less than what we were looking at long range last year. So what I would propose is that we look at a two fiscal year period is what we're trying to look for and try to solve for. Gives us a much better perspective on the numbers ultimately you come to, but we've gone out long enough to assure us we have no structural problems. We've tried to take all the financial considerations into effect that we're seeing in the long range, but we can address the short range much more cautiously. Probably if you go to slide number 2, it's probably the good news part of our whole story today. You had an update on this on your 10/29 strategic planning session. And from that time, just to give you perspective, the good news stories is that we had an increase in fund balance that we weren't expecting. Some of it's due to rebudgets, which is a normal process. But approximately $13 million, almost $13.1 million, was more than what I had projected in expenditure savings. That was outside of the normal pattern of what we've been including or incurring the two previous years. We normally spend 97% to 98% of budgeted expenditures. This year we came in at 93% or 94%.
And you would attribute this to?
Mayor and Council, I think when we were making our changes back in November, December last year, we did it in a very basic way. We did not kind of, we took the cuts or reductions of personnel, but we didn't look at all the other ancillary costs that may come with it or savings that were going to come with it in our programs. And we did it very quickly, and we were very conservative in our reductions. And so we didn't assume maybe a lot of the other.
You were taking a cautiously pessimistic approach.
Well, and one of the factors I was taking in with all the different packages, the severance and so forth, I tried to stay conservative.
We were very generous, right, as far as what we thought that impact might be by those who.
What we're saying is that with all the changes that came out, we saved a lot more than.
A lot more than we had, and we were trying to be very conservative.
They were much more effective in saving money than what we had conservatively estimated, projected, which is good.
Right.
Yes.
I do not project that to repeat itself. I think that's more of a one-time
situation.
But
we now have a new baseline.
So that's a new baseline, and the good news is that you can see from what I think Mr. Brady presented at your presentation, we've already projected 11.3 million drop in some of our major revenue categories for this year. So that gave us a cushion of almost $2 million. Now, the part I want to update you on, after
the
getting...
The cushion being that we saved more money than the drop in revenue.
Correct. Right. It's a timing of the one time against this base of revenue. But after we got some more information on what we're seeing in revenues after a three-month period of actual data coming in, I see greater weakness in the court revenues than what we were originally projecting. So I wanted to give you that offset against that, leaving us from those additional savings about $819,000 against what we could.
And let's be clear, we're going to talk a little bit more about what's happening in the courts, at least what our analysis is today. The $819,000, what that represents is a dollar amount higher than what we were expecting that's going to be contributed to the fund balance. So our fund balance goal is met. This is going to be, at the end of the year, what we're projecting is that will be an additional increment in part of the fund balance at the end of the year.
We have a net savings of $819,000. Right. Above the target.
Above target.
Right.
So now on slide number three, kind of go into where we have currently projected our greatest losses. Our greatest issue and why we're taking this short-term view and trying not to come forward with a number today is I would appreciate to evaluate November data and December data, because if you look at the top six, seven categories there, they're extremely volatile and tied to the economy. So the greater information we have in analyzing that, I think the better off we are in providing you a number that's more reasonable going into the budget process. So you can see that we've already projected off of what we'd originally projected, 8.5% on our local sales tax. Our local sales tax has been a little bit schizophrenic. That's why I'd like another couple months of data just to see where we're going to kind of firm up, if the trend that we saw last month is the new trend or if it's the trend that we had the month before. So it's been up and
that
down.
Being the last month was sort of flat, and the month before continued the drops.
And actually, in retail sales, it was up, but one month doesn't make a trend.
Right.
So we're looking going into Christmas. We won't have December sales, but with the December data, that won't come until the February numbers or February time frame. So we'll try to factor in everything that we can.
What you're anticipating, one reason to wait to February is that you'll have the November and December sales tax numbers by the time we get back together in February. Which will give us a better idea as whether this is trending or whether it's a
yes, sir.
1 or 2 month blip. Well,
yes, sir.
Yeah.
Let's hope not. State sales tax, we were more conservative in the state than what they've, because we were more conservative than the numbers they provided us, and they've still gone further below what we even expected them to do. So, as you all know from the news, it's not been good news for them from a statewide basis, and that's our state shared sales tax. Vehicle license tax, probably we were more pessimistic on what was going to happen to that. We've had some strength coming off of that. That's made up of a mix of age of cars and the depreciable value of cars when you renew your registration and so forth. So we may have put a little more stock in an aged population. So that's one of the issues that we've have a little positive news. It looks like it's going to be about $2.8 million more than we'd originally budgeted. Licenses and permits, most of those other areas, it's all tied to what's going on in the economy and with our local population. The big number I want to talk about later is urban revenue sharing. Think about urban revenue sharing, it's a 2-year lag, so we better be pretty good at projecting what's going on with that. So
when you say it's a 2-year lag, in other words, this number 57852 for 910 is actually collections from the state from 2 years ago. Therefore, we know exactly what the number is.
We know exactly. And what we do is tap into what their raw data is for the last year and the current year so that as we go forward.
And as we go forward and we look at the current downturn, that's going to hit us in actually 2 years from now.
And it's going to be quite
telling. We'll know. We'll have a long lead time to know exactly what that amount's going to
be. We're going to have a big downturn next year in urban revenue sharing because the economy
last year was already down. Okay.
Well, and matter of fact, this year was down, but we had projected that it was going to be down.
Right.
It dropped from 66 down to 57,
right.
And then it's going to continue that decline.
And then in the future, out there after the census is done, we do still project being affected by that even more than what the economy is doing.
And explain why.
We are expected to lose population share as a compared to the region. You know, we've hit a more of a maturation in our growth curve. Other areas on the west side, they're much faster growth rates, so the counts will redistribute how the populations used in distributive formulas.
We'll have to see.
Yes.
The west side,
more recently.
Yes.
It's has seen decrease. So it's still maybe up in the air, but typically, because our community doesn't grow as fast as a percentage as other communities, we've lost.
Put it in English, and I'm just using these numbers as an example. In the current budget cycle, Mesa's population may represent 10% of the state population, therefore we get 10% of the revenue. With the next census, we may only represent 9% or 8.5% or whatever, because other communities have grown faster over the last 2 or 3 or 4 years. Therefore, it's not that our population has gone down, but we're instead of being 10%, getting 10% of the pot, we might only get 8.5% or 9% of the pot. And those numbers I made up, so don't print those.
That is correct,
those
Mayor.
Those aren't far from being.
That's how it works.
But it's how it works.
That's the formula.
Okay.
And just to give you on slides 3 and 4, This is kind of just how the budget for 9-10 is sliced up. We've put it in there by program basis with public safety showing what the percentage is of the full appropriated budget for 9-10 in the general fund. Everything we're talking about today is in the general fund. We've looked at all funds, but the general fund is where the squeeze is. Public safety is about 69% of our total expenditures without debt service or the fund balance figured in for information, and 56% of the total pot. If you look at it from a standpoint of major expenditure area or major object category, personal services in the general fund without debt service or fund balance is about 70% of that total pot. And on page 6 is how we're funding the overall expenditures this year.
Now, once again, Chuck, the fund transfers, that $71 million, that continues the policy of not adjusting fund transfers.
That is correct.
So it's within the programmed fund transfer that we approved and is a carryover from the previous council, so people can know that we're not increasing revenues from utilities and other things to cover shortfalls.
That is correct.
Those transfers, the amounts that we're taking from the enterprise, the utilities, the electrical, the water, those things have remained constant.
That is correct. And I'll just put in so that no one thinks we're only transferring 71.4. This is the net transfer from the general fund, because the general fund does transfer out to other funds to support mass transit and those types of things.
But just we're continuing that policy of what I would call fiscal discipline, that we are not trying to raid those other funds or take or be inconsistent with what we take from the earnings from our utilities and other things. We're being consistent with a long-term plan, and we're holding steady with that.
In the long-term forecast that produce all these numbers through 16-17, it's the same transfer amount for all those fiscal years.
Good. Thank you.
Now let's just get into some of the major revenue areas. City sales tax, and as I said earlier, all Global Insight and the local economists are saying that we're going to start seeing improvement in the economy this year and going into next. So they're saying that we're going to have a 6.8% growth in retail sales. What we did last year, and we were pretty successful at on matching up, we used the indicators that were associated with construction jobs and employment, and they came out pretty close for us. Well, those are not going to be the indicators coming out of this thing. So we tried to tie it to what the indicators are on retail sales and disposable income. So that is what's driving these. I would still be pessimistically cautious about what's coming out of these. We don't have enough. They're so, from a statistician standpoint, there's so much noise in these numbers, it's extremely hard to get even a short-range forecast. We're going to do our best to do that, but it's hard to get a short-range forecast with what's going on in the economy. So next, this fiscal year, we're now predicting we're going to have a total of in the general fund of $109.3 or $4 million. The next one is the state shared revenues. It's being largely driven, again, by personal incomes and job growth data. As you can see, it's got much the same curve, and that's kind of a common theme through all of these, other than what we're doing on a local level. It's these, they're driving it by the state revenue based on what they're seeing from a national basis, I'm afraid, a little bit too optimistically.
Now, with state shared revenue, this does not assume any change in the statutorily defined share between the state and the cities. The legislature has hinted that they may attack that. So if the legislature comes in and changes that formula, which is set in law, if they try to change that, they could attempt to take more from the cities, which would mean that these numbers are no longer good, correct?
Yes, and irregardless of what goes on in the economy, that's what I view as the greatest threat to our current income stream. Yeah. So that's I'm very interested in what's going on in the legislature.
Yeah, as are we, and I think as should our citizens be, because that is what we would call the low-hanging fruit, to come back to the cities and take that which goes beyond what the law says needs to be transferred to what needs to be shared with the cities. And I think there's people need to understand there's a basic difference of opinion as to what is going on with state shared revenue. If you look at the cities and look at the history, the cities would say, and I believe this is correct, but of course I'm unbiased, that the state collects certain revenue on behalf of the cities and just remits it back. Many in the legislature would see this as, no, the state is giving up some of their revenue. And so there's a basic difference in how they look at things. I think the law basically states, supports the city's view of that, which is they are collecting for us and remitting back. However, there are rumblings that there are those that might attack that percentage. And if that's the case, then the cities will have to make up for their budget problems so the state can try to solve their budget problems. And that's just the reality of it.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Building permit revenue. Here's one of the examples from a local level of, we're still looking for the base revenue of what the normal activity of a city our size is. You know, there's just a normal building permit activity. We haven't hit that yet. So it's, I hope we're close, but that has been our challenge here, is finding from a local level what is our normal activity on a day-to-day or year-to-year basis that just underlies any activity of a population this size. And again, I think it's too optimistic coming up on the outside, but again, this one's being driven by housing unit figures that we're seeing on the state level. I just think it's a little too optimistic. There's a lot of excess capacity out there at this time to see these range of numbers. And until we get that excess capacity absorbed, I think we're going to see a decline in this area or a flattening of this area. Court revenues. And you can see a more conservative growth curve, but more recently we've seen some downward pressure in what we're seeing collected through the courts. From a problematic standpoint, we're seeing in the last two fiscal years fewer violations filed. And then from a case, and this is as much statistics as I have on this, we'd have to do a much deeper analysis than this. And on a per case basis on a file, the revenue trend has been down since 05-06 on what we collect per case. So that whatever is driving that.
So Mayor and Council, that is a concern, that as we see, while the citations may have dropped off somewhat, we're also seeing a decline in what is being, the revenues that come in per citation. So we're not sure where that adjustment's being made, but that is drawing concern. Now, what I've heard also from the courts is that there is also, because of, you know, obviously economy, individuals' ability to pay for citations, there's been a lot more effort to work on the payment plans, which may be just delaying the ultimate remittal of the dollars. But the problem is this is now becoming a multi-year issue, and we would expect at some point for that to kind of level out. So it is something that we're working with the courts on, and we're going to be watching a lot more carefully now because we are very concerned that even if citations were to get back to their normal amount, if the decision about what the citation value should be or what should be paid is being adjusted significantly in the courts, that is impacting our revenues overall.
Okay. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
I guess I would argue that one of the areas to look at for analysis is that we have seen a trend over those past couple of years of a significant decrease in criminal activity. That also comes at a time when the city matured its, for example, its red light camera program, and so I think what you might be seeing too is fewer violations as the population is aware of the cameras and where they're installed. The other issue too is with, I think, the dramatic policy changes with regard to DUI, that again the public is aware of that, and I think you're seeing a decrease in DUI violations perhaps as well. So there may be a combination of factors that related to those policy changes either made at the state level or based on the good work our PD has done or on our traffic safety system, that might all create reasons at least to look at for this trend. Thank you, Mayor.
Yeah, I think we need to be careful how we throw out court revenues. I mean, we aren't the small town who sets up the speed trap so we can pay for our budget. I mean, I guess what we're saying is that in a city our size, you would expect through just normal human activity, there's a certain level of court revenue that's going to come in. Mm-hmm. We're not driven. We don't look at court revenues as a profit center. We look at it as, you know, people are going to, that are driving, are going to have citations. They're going to run red lights. They're going to create. They're going to commit petty crimes that result in fines and those kind of things. And we're saying that for perhaps a variety of reasons that has dipped, and we have to be cognizant of the fact that even though it's not a profit center, we don't do things simply to make money. As a matter of fact, there's some things that we probably should be making money, like photo radar, that we actually don't make money on, and that's fine because public safety is the primary concern. But I think we need to certainly be aware of that, as Mr. Brady said, and look to see make sure that in the normal activity we're not creating a situation where the revenue stream drops inadvertently because of how we're administering or how things are going. But I just want to make sure that I hope we're not treating courts as a profit center, because I don't believe that that's anyone's intention of doing that. Councilmember Summers.
I suppose along that line, one of the projects that this revenue is being used to fund is the new court building. Do we anticipate the decline in revenue from court revenues impacting our repayment on the bonds for that?
No. Well, the bonds are paid for out of the general obligation.
I think what Councilman Summers is speaking to is the construction portion that is continuing, and that is being used first for the debt on that, and then we do pick up some of it out.
We have plenty of coverage.
Yes.
What we're saying on the general revenues, there's plenty of coverage on that.
And I didn't mean to imply that this is this activity is much like, you look at building permits. There is a base level of activity in a court, just like there would be with building permits. And obviously,
world, we'd love it that there were no court revenues, there were no violations, but that's not going to happen in a city of nearly half a million people. So
that's correct. So something has changed in the trend, and we're trying to catch what that trend is.
Okay.
So now on slide number 11, we just kind of put all of what we talked about into numbers. And if you look at 9-10 compared to what we're seeing for 10-11, you can see a drop of about $3.5 million. Well, if you look at urban revenue sharing, which is the last or second from the last line, we're going to lose $14.2 million next year in urban revenue sharing because of the economy from 2 years ago. That's the delay we see in the timing, and we still have a couple years of that to come. That's 24.6% of that revenue category. So any gains that we're seeing based on the econometrics now are more than being offset by that one revenue category.
And Chuck, what's really disturbing about this chart is the $14.2 million is certainty.
Yes.
And the $6.8 million on the top is only a projection.
So I would say that's kind of the bad news portion of this forecast.
And Merry Christmas to you, too.
Yes, sir. Now, to outline some of the expenditure pressures we've seen on slide 12, we've taken a very flat approach from 9-10 to 10-11 in our approach. We have not given any inflationary factors to any of our normal expenditure areas. There is no inflation currently in the economy. We hope it stays that way for a while. So we recognize that. We have not built back in any other cost adjustments on salary other than what we're required to do. And what we're required to do is make sure that our Arizona State retirement commitments are met. Those are going to go up 5.3% this next fiscal year and scheduled for another 5.1% the year after. Now, the issue, if you look at the two lines on public safety and the Arizona State Retirement System, both of them have had losses in their investment portfolios. So their actuarial studies are requiring increased drivers.
And we have no control over these amounts. These are amounts we receive a bill from the state retirement funds, the state retirement and the public safety retirement. So we have no control over these expenditures.
Right. Now, the difference in the cost to the city is on Arizona State Retirement. We split that 50-50. Anything that's being required by the fund to be funded, they've had much the same losses this last year, but the difference in what we're talking about in that contribution rate is we share that contribution rate with the employee. So we're recognizing the city's portion there. This is what we've been told is going to be happening.
We do not do that on public safety. There is no... Public safety, the city pays 100% of the contribution.
They pay 100% of above the capped percentage that the employee is required to pay. So anything that's increased is 100% on the city.
It's totally on the city.
Right.
And now that's different. So public safety retirement is employees have a different plan than all other city employees.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Now, the caution I have with them, they have not released what they're going to actually do. We have tried to forecast based on what we've seen from a comparable economic impact that we've provided the statistics from Arizona State Retirement. We ourselves have applied this to try to get a view of what's happening with public safety. I'm not guaranteed that these are going to be the end result. They have different issues and pressures in their fund than the state retirement system does, Arizona State Retirement System on the civilian side. So that's the caution I give you on that. But that increase is going to be $1 million plus each fiscal year for the next two fiscal years.
And probably further out from that, just right. Looking at their investment portfolio.
Yeah, the had staff members attend education, and I will commend the public safety. This is the first time they've ever done that. They had a public information session yesterday, and they're disclosing some of the issues. So we're gaining greater knowledge. Hopefully we can help try to predict some of what they're going to do going forward. On our employee benefits trust, the medical cost, every year we contribute another 10.1%, 10.6% to that fund from the city's contribution.
And now, that is because?
That's the matching the cost of escalation cost or attempting to match the escalation cost of medical cost on the benefit side.
And that's, but I mean, because the city agreed to do that, or that's the
to maintain a sufficient fund balance in the EBT or employee benefit trust funds. That's why we to do that.
Right.
Now, why that doesn't show as 10%? That's a calendar year basis, so those are implemented January 1st of a fiscal year. So you're seeing half of an impact on a calendar year from a cost standpoint. But those are 10% contributions, and it's a blended rate with our life insurance, medical, or our dental insurance, vision insurance, those kind of things. One of the other areas we've been told about from a cost standpoint is mass transit costs. Due to the region also losing revenue in this economy and facing cost pressures, we've already been notified that on the dial-a-ride, on an ongoing basis, our share of the cost will increase because of their declining revenue, $400,000. From now on. So we have already been notified of that, but it's still preliminary. They're going to meet in January, from what I've told, and hopefully we'll have firmer numbers by March on what's going to happen both with the fixed route and the dial-a-ride. Now, on the fixed route side, what is happening is there were scheduled takeovers by the RPTA of some of our local bus routes. Those will not occur, as we've been told at this time. So you're seeing increased cost based on those scheduled takeovers, $75,000 in 10-11 and $1.6 million in 11-12. So some significant cost pressures there.
Yeah, Councilmember Higgins.
Thank you. Chuck, can you explain what you just said about what was going on with Dial-A-Ride?
Dial-A-Ride is based on a regional basis also, just like the bus routes are. And they put a segment of what they're collecting in their half-cent sales tax into that cost pool. Well, because of the drop in their income tax or their sales tax portion, they don't automatically cut cost. They push the cost to the city before they start talking operational reductions.
So this is a reflection of the amount of dollars that were typically coming in from the regional sales tax.
Correct.
To help fund a portion of Dial-A-Ride. Since those revenues aren't coming in, they're now spreading the costs back out to the cities.
Correct.
So, and why do we not, you don't project for 11-12 that there is?
Well, it's ongoing.
It just continues. It's just not a continues. New amount. That would just stay in the budget.
I didn't put another 11-12 to say that was incremental because everything else there is incremental. You can add it on top of.
Okay.
This is one that starts, and that's the way it's going to stay for us.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Councilmember Summers?
I will say that the RPTA is working on a number of programs to help reduce that cost over time. Particularly, they're doing some in-person assessments of qualifications for Dial-A-Ride, which historically they had not done before. Those folks who are significantly disabled will be able to get lifetime certification, so they don't have to continue to repeat it. The idea is to ensure that the service is available to folks who truly need it, not just to reduce costs, but, as these costs escalate and you have to pare back, that really imperils the ability of these folks to have access to that very service that they need to get to appointments and to live independently. So the RPTA is working on that as well as other measures to help reduce some of those costs. So we should be aware of that as well.
Vice Mayor.
Along those same lines, the bus routes you were talking about, those were anticipated to be taken over by RPTA because of Prop 400 monies and because of the reduction. We now have to maintain what we have, and also understand that maintenance is because there's federal stipulations. We can't just go out and say this route is gone because there's federal stipulations that prevent us from doing that. So this is a cost that we're going to have to absorb, at least for the immediate future.
And one of the things that has been discussed at the regional level is, since these are mandated by the federal government, and it basically is, for all intents and purposes, an unfunded mandate, one of the things that the region has been trying to do is to allow some of these stimulus and other dollars that are coming down from Washington that have been, for the most part, restricted to capital projects, to allow those to be used to cover some of these operational shortfalls, because the operational shortfalls are, to a large extent, created by the federal mandates that the mayor or the vice mayor has twice today. That the vice mayor has recently alluded to, and so far there is a very, very small percentage that they allow, but no movement on that. So we're still dealing with what is, in essence, an unfunded mandate. Okay. Yeah, Vice Mayor.
To clarify that one more time, those routes are in place because we implemented them.
Right.
But once they're implemented, it's taking them away that's the hard part.
Yeah.
But they were implemented because there was the anticipation of,
and that's, well, yeah, when I say the mandate, that, that's the mandate. Once
the mandate
put in,
is, once it's there, you can't take it away.
Yeah. You're forced to maintain that level of service. Yeah, that's good. Thank you for the clarification.
Yes. Okay. So to kind of summarize, it's pretty obvious that there's a likely shortfall in 10-11. That's what we're facing. Measuring the extent of that shortfall, as we've discussed, is kind of premature. I'd like a couple more months of data to see what we're doing on the local economy, see if we're getting firming, or if we're going to continue on a downward trend, or if we see any improvement at all. We obviously have state budgetary issues that we're facing. That's the single biggest threat that I see, and we'll see what we get by the time we come back on an update. What we will do and continue to do, as we always do, is critical analysis of all our operations, making sure that we're meeting program goals and doing them efficiently on a cost basis. We'll be looking at evaluating methods of resolving the increased costs for the pensions, wages, and medical programs. We'll always be looking at those. As I've said, we'll be looking at all critical costs. We'll continue to right-size the organization where we can, and we'll always be looking to maintain the fund balance goals. So any measure we come off and number that we bring back to you will always maintain those fund balance goals.
It's more than I
Slide 16 just kind of goes over our tentative schedule for the spring on the budget preparation cycle. We'll come back to you in late February with a forecast update and provide you more firm number of what we're looking at. March through April, we'll have the budget discussions as you require with the departments, as you see fit. The 13th of May, preliminary budget submitted to the council. The 17th of May, notice of intent to adopt any utility rate adjustments. The 7th, adopt the tentative budget. June 21st, we'll have public hearings, adopt the budget, and adopt any utility rate suggestions. And then on the 8th of July, the secondary property tax levy will be done, as it's done annually.
Okay.
Any questions?
Any other questions? A couple quick observations is that, number one, you know, even though these numbers certainly are a little bit disheartening because of the overall economic conditions, I will say that I think staff has done an incredible job of positioning us so that the net impact, certainly in the short term, is not what it could have been. And I think what other government entities are experiencing who did not institute some of the changes that staff went through, the restructurings, the reorganizations, those kind of things. So I commend you for coming up with a plan that actually has produced more savings than we had anticipated, which is good news, and has actually helped soften the blow of the continued free fall of the economy, at least in the current year, and allows us the luxury of being able to look into the future and come up with adjusted plans, revised plans that hopefully will help us to deal with those shortfalls like we've dealt with the ones we've experienced. So thank you for that. Councilmember Summers.
I'd like to echo that sentiment, Mr. Brady, and Brian, and everybody who have been sitting at their desk for a long time. Look at these numbers. All of our department heads who took these numbers and figured out how to keep a balanced budget there. How many cities, we can't even count them anymore right now, just in the Valley, are looking at significant deficits and how they are going to cut their budgets in order to meet a balanced budget requirement by the end of this fiscal year. And we are, we're making adjustments, of course, but our budget is on, and you're to be commended for that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Next item on the agenda is to acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. We have a
second.
Motion for Councilmember Summers, second for the Vice Mayor. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Any reports?
Good.
Okay. Mr. Brady.
Well, Merry Christmas. No, I'm not sure we're leaving in the holiday spirit after today.
Thank you, Ebenezer.
Who's going to go enjoy winter?
Dress warm, smart guy.
Yeah. So this is the last meeting of the council for 2009, and our first meeting in January is January. Carla, help me out. 11th. 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 So
Thursday.
Unless the council would like to come back on the 7th, the Thursday before, to review the agenda for the 11th, that would be the question.
Let's just leave that open, see what we've got. Yeah, I think some of it may depend upon
Maybe we'll just do that.
What's going on with your...
But as far as a regular council meeting, that would be the 11th. If we need to have a study session before then, we would do that on
the 7th. Yeah, but if something significant happens with your discussions...
We may just tentatively go ahead and put that
let's
on your
plan on that
calendars, just in case we need to come back and visit about that. So, and I believe that's all we have. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Crocker, any request to speak?
No request, Mayor.
Move for adjournment.
We have a motion to adjourn. Second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you so very much.